really been in a war yet, but this boy's got utter belief in himself.
And somehow, she's found the acceleration.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Let'sRun.com Track Talk Podcast. The 2024 World Cross Country Championships are in the books. We're back from Serbia. Gonna break it down. The Kenyan women went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the entire world. Beatrice Chebet and Jacob Kiplimo have repeated as individual champions. And Joshua Cheptegei has finished off the podium at World XC for the first time since 2017. Stateside, the outdoor track season is starting up. An American you've never heard of just ran 1:44 for 800 meters. Elizabeth Leachman just ran 15:25 to break the high school girls' 5K record. Bunch of things to discuss there. Almost all of the top US sprinters are running relay meet in Florida. We'll also hit some of the April Fool's highlights. Hopefully we did fool you, at least temporarily, with our annual April Fool's page on Monday. We're also going to look back at the Truth is Stranger Than Fiction section. What were the craziest stories in running over the past 12 months? A bunch of things to break down. This is Jonathan Galt. I am joined by Robert Johnson, the co-founder, co-host of this show, co-founder of Let'sRun.com. Weldon Johnson is not here. He's on vacation this week. So it's up to me and Rojo. Two-man episode. I think we'll do all right. We like each other, Robert, don't we? I think we're going to do fine without Weldon. So, how are you?
Doing amazing. A few housekeeping things. John, you undersell it. You need to introduce yourself as the best journalist in all of track and field. You told me you were the only North American journalist, written journalist, to be in Serbia. And that's why this is the best track and field podcast on planet Earth. Because this is where the diehard track fans go. World Cross Country is an amazing race. We have to be there. The fact that others don't go there doesn't bother us. We're going to the damn event. I'm sending you there. I'm glad you went. Now, although I'm on the Track and Field News website, John, and they've written an article with Jeff Hallebaugh, says Belgrade, Serbia. So he's acting like he was there. This is troubling to me just because there's a photography guy taking photos for them. They shouldn't be putting Belgrade, Serbia on the, is it called the masthead, John? So was he maybe in the stands and you didn't see him? What's going on?
It's not the masthead. It's called a dateline. And you're only supposed to use it in a story if you were actually there reporting for the story. So either Jeff Hallebaugh or whoever was there for Track and Field News has an invisibility cloak because they want it in the media areas or in the mix zone when I was in those spots. Or maybe they are just misusing the dateline, which... I don't know if it's an honest mistake or whatever. I don't know. Shouldn't be using a dateline if you weren't on site, but yeah, we don't need to dedicate a whole episode to this.
And just to be factual, you said we're back from Serbia. I was not in Serbia. Full disclosure.
Fair.
We were referring to Let's Run. We got to be technical.
The royal we of Let's Run. Yes. Well, I was in Serbia. Robert and Weldon were not. Yeah.
If you're a new listener to the show, this is the greatest track and field podcast. The only podcast on planet Earth that I'm aware of that Jacob had mentioned. Christian has listened to, Christian Coleman's dad has listened to, and now Noah Lyles' mom. She tweeted out a link to the show last week. Thank you, Mrs. Lyles, for listening.
Not Mrs. Lyles. Keisha Kane Bishop is her name. She doesn't go by Mrs. Lyles, but...
It was the colloquial Mrs. Lyles is what I meant, John. Or
okay, sure. All right.
Anyways, but in your intro, John, you kind of were a little bit harsh on... Chapter guy saying he didn't medal. Why didn't you crap on is the right word? Agnes Engedich, the 28:46 10K world record holder who didn't also medal in the race.
I feel like Chapter guy was a big topic of discussion. Going in and coming out, this is a world record holder in the 5,000 and 10,000 on the track. He's an Olympic gold medalist. He'd medaled at. Well, I guess it was only two straight world crosses. I was thinking he medaled in 2017, but he didn't. He led that for a long time. But yeah, that was just, I don't know. It was one, Cheptegei's a bigger name than Agnes Engedich. And to be clear, we already recapped World Cross Country in great detail. We did a preview show on Friday from Serbia. We did a recap show on Saturday from Serbia. Both of them I really enjoyed. if you were part of our letsrun.com supporters club, which you can join by going to letsrun.com/subscribe, you would have already listened to those on demand. And for that reason, we're not going to go and give blow-by-blow recaps of this race because we've already talked about it in great detail. But yeah, we'll rehash it a little bit here, you know, a few thoughts we might have a couple days out. And one of them, I guess, relates to Ngedich and not really Cheptegei and Ngedich. She posted on Instagram, Robert, after the race, she essentially said she wasn't feeling herself and mentioned menstrual cramps. She didn't specifically say I was dealing with them during the race, but I think that was the inference. It says, "We take good days and bad days with grace and clean heart. I was not perfect today health-wise in Belgrade, and the competition course and weather demanded perfection. Now is to deal with menstrual cramps and pain, recover and prepare for Adizero Road to Records on April 27th. So I bring this up because one of our topics was after the race, Agnes Ngedich and Immaculate and Yango, the two women who broke 29 minutes for 10K in Valencia in January, neither of them medaled in this race. We were saying, does that mean that the shoes are just much better on the roads now? The roads are faster than the track, and that 28:46 for the roads isn't as impressive as we thought. We kind of reached the conclusion that, yeah, the shoes probably do make it that the road is faster than the track now. But we didn't consider the possibility that, you know, they were feeling sick or they won 100%. And this is what Ngedich is saying. Now, I found it kind of interesting that she finished fifth in this race. She said she had menstrual problems. That was also the reason that was given at the 2023 World Championships when she finished sixth in that race in the 10,000 meters. But I just found it is a coincidence that the two World Championships she's run, she had menstrual cramps both times, or have you done some Rojo math here to figure it out?
John. I was always wondering all these years why such a charismatic, brilliant young man like yourself was still single. And this might be one of them. Never question a woman when she says it's that time of the month. But I actually did do some math. I was like, huh. So I typed in how many days, or figured out how many days it was from the women's 10,000 final to the world championship final in cross country championships. And it's 224 days. I then typed into Google, what's the average monthly period duration? It's 28 days. 224 divided by 28 is 8 months even. Story totally checks out. So, this is the
That's interesting. That was actually more precise math than I thought you were going to do. I assumed you were going to be consulting astrological charts and looking at the cycles of the moon, but no, I think it's fair. I mean, I found it coincidental, but at the same time, I find it believable because she did run a little worse than expectations. And I actually appreciate the transparency because I feel like it's becoming more common for female athletes to be unafraid of sharing this. And there shouldn't be a stigma attached. This is an issue that affects female athletes. It doesn't affect male athletes. And I think it's part of the story of a race. Like Gudov Sagai, she mentioned that after she got beat at World Indoors by Ellie St. Pierre. I don't have an issue with female athletes saying this. And hey, I was going through something difficult today. It's natural and it's unfortunate timing. It's one of the things that comes with being a female athlete, but it's part of their lives. It's part of the story. So I don't have a problem with them coming out and saying it. And I kind of commend the transparency, in fact.
Except when Jakob Ingebrigtsen says he has a medical position, people call him a sore loser. No, I agree with you. You know, it impacts different women much differently. You know, some women aren't bothered. Some people are greatly bothered by it. And, you know, I think initially, I said on Sunday, like, or Saturday, if she had won this race in dominant fashion, you're thinking, wow, 28:46, this girl might be hard to beat. Now, I think you and I both come to the conclusion, okay, the roads probably are a little bit faster than the track if you get the right conditions. I still think she's going to be, is it certainly, you know, what was she, sixth in the 10,000 at Worlds last year? I think she's a medal contender. And I've done the math moving forward. she's not going to be on her, you know, if it's every 28 days, it's nowhere close to, it's going to be like 4.7 months. So she's good to go for the Olympic final. Good to go for the Olympic final.
Wait. I'm just going to pump the brakes there. Periods, I've never had a period, but I can tell you, I don't think they just work and like, oh, it's 28 days like clockwork. Some women maybe, but I think they're a little bit more flexible and fluid than that. So who knows? But I hope that it doesn't happen for her again at the Olympics, given that it's already happened at two of her biggest recent races.
But I think that the win was obviously huge for Beatrice Chebet. Great cross country runner. One last time, wins this time, 14:05, 5,000 PB. You know, so congrats to her. And on the men's side, if Ngedich was the biggest loser, quote unquote loser, on the women's side, Cheptegei, 5,000, 10,000 world record holder, 3-time 10,000 gold medalist, Olympic 5,000 meter champion. Not meddling was a surprise. And we started to ask, on Saturday, is the decline started? We saw the 2:08:59 marathon. And I thought that the stat that I came up with and we put in the article, I'm going to repeat it here, was important. To me, it's not the age. I mean, he is the same age. He's 27. That's the same age that Bekele and Gebre Selassie both won their last track medals.
We have a correction on that though, Robert. A couple message board posters pointed out correctly, Gebre Selassie's last track medal, his last gold medal was 2000 Sydney when he was 27, but he actually went on to win a bronze at the 2001 Worlds and a silver at the 2003 Worlds. So he would have been 30 years old when he won his last medal, but it was a silver, not a gold.
Rare mistake by Roger, rare mistake. But, what I came up with was how long have the last three kings of the distances been on top? And
it still applies because Haile wasn't, by that point, Bekele had essentially surpassed him as the king. But that that stretches of being the guy on the track, it was Geb, then Bekele, then Farah. They're all about 6 or 7 years, which I think is the larger point you're trying to make.
Yeah. Gebre Selassie, first gold 93, last gold 2000. Farah, first gold 2011, last gold 2017. Bekele was second, 2003 to 2009. And then Farah 2011 to 2017. Now, I guess if you're a Cheptegei fan, you're going to, he didn't win his first gold until 19. He won silver in 2017. So if you say his reign didn't start to 2019, then he could have, he says he's going to move to marathon after this year. He could still be gold in the summer. But, if you say 2017 when he won that silver, he's kind of near the end. We that's why Usain Bolt's 8 years on top was rare. It's just really hard to be the best of anything. I mean, you could probably look at how many years was Michael Jordan's Bulls on top. Your physical prime is a limited window. And you could still be, pretty damn good on the way up and on the way out, but dominant, not so much normally.
Yeah, no, it's a fair argument to make. At some point, he's going to decline on the track. And, this guy ran 12:41 last year. He won the 10,000 meter world title. He can absolutely come back and win the Olympics this year. But, sixth, he got beat by some of the guys he's going to be facing. Kiplimo is going to be a rival in Paris. Berhu Aragawi, who was a silver medalist, is going to be a rival in Paris. We're now in April. The Olympics are 4 months away. So he's getting beat fairly convincingly over the last four laps. It's not unimportant, but it doesn't discount him. It doesn't mean he definitely can't win,
Correct. Because the thing that they're focused on is the Olympics. Let's be honest. I mean, great for him showing up. Uganda got the silver, right?
Team silver. Do people pay attention to the team races at World Cross Country? I know I don't really.
Well, we should. And I was actually thinking about that in terms of, we're going to talk about how to make the event more popular. I think we should mention it because I think that's why a lot of people send their full teams is where they're going to stand. NCAA Cross, we pay attention to the teams.
Well, because they compete as teams throughout the season, whereas World Cross, you're only a team for that meet. Now, I guess we freak out in 2013 when the Americans got the silver medal. We made it a big deal. When the Americans got the bronze in the junior races last year in Bathurst, we were like, oh, bronze medal for the teams, that sort of thing. And now this year they aren't that competitive, so we don't really talk about it. Like, the one thing we do talk about is Kenya going, taking the top five spots in the women's race, because that was phenomenal. But I feel like generally World Cross is more of an individual thing than a team thing. Maybe that's just our biased perspective.
Well, I was thinking of the weekend we should focus more on the team just to try to give more people to watch. But one thing I was wondering about was, you know, I often think, why do we spend thousands of dollars to send you there so that you can talk to these people? Did you talk to Kiplimo at all about, I don't know, he's extremely dominant at the half marathon distance. Incredible at cross country. But he's not been winning on the track. Does that really bother him? Does he think there's something missing? Can he change it up? Like,
well, he certainly feels there's something missing. I asked him, you know, you've had these amazing accomplishments, world half champion, world half record, world cross champion times two. Said, yeah, look, the thing that's missing is the Olympic gold, obviously. You know, that's what he wants. But, you know, we had this conversation on Saturday or on Friday. Like, these gold medals on the track are really, really hard to win. And his skill set is, he's pretty adaptable to everything. He could just grind and hammer off a fast pace, but he doesn't quite have the wheels of a Cheptegei that's the guy who's been winning the 10,000, or Jakob Ingebrigtsen in the 5,000, certainly. I wouldn't be picking him. Though I guess a few years ago, actually, there was a 3K. I think it was the COVID year. Kiplimo outkicked Ingebrigtsen. Ingebrigtsen, I think, was only 19 at the time, but the guy won the Olympic gold medal in the 1500 a year later, and Kiplimo beat him in the end, which I thought was pretty phenomenal performance. But yeah, it's just, there can only be one, or I guess two, between the 5K and 10K. And just because he is better on these services, but it doesn't guarantee you're going to do anything. So yeah, I don't know. I didn't dive in, like, is it something that bothers you? But he is clearly motivated by the Olympic gold. That is his number one aim.
It's just on paper. I mean, we say he doesn't have a kick. He's run 7:26 for 3,000, 12:41 for 5,000, 26:33 for 10,000. I mean, 57:31 for the half. Like it's just, the 10,000 should be his wheelhouse. It'll be interesting to me if he does become, kept the guys out and this guy started. It wouldn't shock me. He's only 23 officially. You know, would it shock you if I told you the next 6 years the 10,000 is owned by Jakob Kiplimo? You know, now,
yes, I wouldn't, because he's already been very good on the track for a few years. It's the same reason we just talked about. I don't see him having a reign at the top after being very good for the last few years and getting medals. Then suddenly he just becomes unbeatable for 6 years. I feel like we might see it for a year or two, and then he moves up to the roads or the full marathon. But I don't see him doing what Cheptegei did.
Well, certainly winning this year wouldn't shock you. 2024, then you repeat in 2025, and you might as well. I mean, although the potential in the marathon, this guy, you know, you and I think both agreed, if anyone's going to dominate the marathon.
Yeah, it's him. I mean, we were saying it before him, and then Kiptum shows up and he has his 1 year of ridiculous performances. But now that he's gone, I think we'd have to say Kiplimo is the guy most likely to dominate the latter half of this decade in the marathon.
By the way, people, did you get up early to watch this World Cross Country in the U.S. on CNBC? Or, I mean, it was on CNBC. It was on Peacock and CBN CNBC. Anyways, I did, and I've got like four different logins that I pay for, and I get free with my internet. And I get two free because I have two different Xfinity internets. Anyways, I had to pay for another one because I couldn't get them to work. And there were so many damn ads, I got confused. That's why. You can watch a lot of this stuff if you have a VPN. Get the VPN we use. Let'srun.com/VPN. Let'srun.com/VPN. Change that location to Dominican Republic. No commercials, baby.
Well, I've got some thoughts on that, Robert, because Peacock, one of the great things about Peacock is you pay for this subscription. In previous years, when they would show the Diamond League, you get the ad-free world feed for 2 hours. It was great. And you get it for a lot of these other events. But now this one was on CNBC. They've essentially, instead of just having two feeds, you have the one on CNBC with ads and the one on Peacock without ads. They just used one feed, which was the CNBC feed, and they fed it to Peacock. And I would think you're already paying for Peacock. Now you have to pay. You also have to sit through the ads as well. I would think they'd have a way to mitigate that. But I guess the NFL game, Peacock had the playoff game, you still had ads on that broadcast as well. But it's unfortunate because we had that taste of ad-free track on Peacock for a couple of years, and now that they might be taking it away.
Correct. It's like you pay for ESPN, you get ads for football, but people are used to that. Plus, there's a natural break in football. When they pause the game for 3 minutes, I go to the bathroom. They show the ads, but also
right. I was there and Tim Hutchings and Paula Radcliffe, who were doing commentary for the World Feed. They were right next to me in the Media Tribune. They're still talking while you go to ads. Like you're missing out on stuff that they are broadcasting. There are no ads in the World Feed.
Speaking of ads, here's another ad. If you check out our running review site, betterrunningshoes.com. If you don't need to buy a shoe, you can go there. If you need to buy a shoe, go there right now. Find the reviews. Click on a link. We'll get a little bit of money, and that's good. But if you don't need a shoe, and you're not a Supporters Club member, you need to support us some way. So go on there and review the shoe you're in. Betterrunningshoes.com. All right, John.
You should talk about this women's race. Can you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? I mean, it's really phenomenal performance. They had this dream team on paper. I guess there is a temptation, though, for me, part of it, to be like, okay, this was a Kenyan dream team, but it was also very much not an Ethiopian dream team. Like, they didn't... Letessa Mbakgide did not run. Gudaf Sagai did not run. I'm not sure if Gudaf Sagai has ever run World Cross. But there was no Ejgayu Taye. You know, Ethiopia, I feel like, sent... And they also have a lot of good milers right now, milers 3K types. They really seem to care more about World Indoors than World Cross, but that's just... I'm giving some context as to why Kenya can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because I don't think the five best Kenyan, 5K, 10K women are way better than the best Ethiopians. I'd say the best Ethiopians might even be a little better, but... That's not to say what they did was, not phenomenal. It was, but just on paper, you would expect Kenya's team to beat this Ethiopian team quite soundly.
And they did. But I guess that's a nice... I don't want to talk too much about this race. It's kind of a segue. I know that you were, Serbia agreed to host this, meet on like 3 or 4 months' notice.
6 months' notice.
Apparently, so kudos to them for stepping up. Otherwise, it wouldn't be held. But you were disappointed in, there weren't very many fans, and there was nowhere for the fans to even get to the finish line, watch the race on TV. There would have been terrible if you actually flew out there to see your kids run, But rather than be negative, I was thinking of, how do we make this event great again? To me, it's one of the greatest, world's greatest foot races, but Europeans have given up. They don't show up anymore. And the prize money is less than it was 20 years ago. And, thank God the very best, generally, Cheptegei and Kiplimo have been showing up, but Kenmore missed out this year for the marathon. You're still getting some big names, but it's like, we want this to be super, super amazing. And I think our house was a great atmosphere. But to me, it's very hard because it's going to be in Tallahassee in 2 years. I'm already going to rent out a bar. I know which bar I'm going to rent out. I'm going to have a party. It's going to be amazing for Let's Run fans. When USA Cross Country was in Boulder like 15 years ago, it was a huge event. Everybody went. Hopefully we can make the same in Tallahassee. And there's tons of diehards. It just becomes a fun thing to go to. It's a destination. And we go and we support it. And hopefully the runners show up. And it kicks ass. But then in 2 years after that, the Americans may just bag it. When it's in Australia, the Australians make a point of showing up. When it's in America, the Americans show up. When it's in Europe, the Europeans show up.
Not this year.
And I think that part of the problem is the during World Indoors, I was like, where are the Kenyan team? And you point out they're probably getting ready for cross. They focused on cross. Ethiopians focused on indoors. And it's like, I want to write an article like how to make World Cross great. And I'm not sure that there's an easy solution. Look, since Let's Run was founded, almost 25 years ago, how to make the sport more popular. It's one of the most popular, common things always on the message board. We don't market it well. It's not easy to market. If someone had come up with this idea, they would have done it. But what's crazy to me now on the track level, we've got Michael Johnson coming up with a track thing. There's a rival group. I didn't even realize until last night, the guy doing the other group is Barry Kahn. I coached Barry at Cornell and I'm still pretty close to Barry. He called me like 2 months ago. I didn't answer the phone. And then another guy that we coached texted me. He's like, hey, have you read this from Barry? He's like, God damn it, I didn't read it. But everybody has their thing and they think, okay, this is going to be Michael Johnson's event's going to be his event. And Barry Kahn's event's going to be his event. And the World Athletics, what's wrong with the Diamond League? That's pretty good. But World Cross, you know, is a different thing. To me, I moving forward, like they want to tinker with a date. It doesn't make sense to me for this to be the same year. If you're going to have them every other year, I do not understand why you would have World Cross and World Indoors in the same year. Because it's like you win one, but not the other, like which is more important, or you go to one and not the other. I mean, I guess you could kind of do it. You could maybe do it like they do the, you know, NCAA cross country, then they have the BU 5K like a week later. But the BU 5K is not really as important as the NCAA cross country meet. So my thought process would be to have World Indoors, you know, on the odd years, and then World Cross on the even years. And everybody knows this is the most important event of the winter. One winter it's World Cross, one winter it's World Indoors. And that way, you know, it's it. It's like back in the olden days, John, when you're living out in the thing, you know, and there was only one woman within like 100 miles, that was the most important woman in your life. But when you
had, what do you mean? Olden days, this is how they did it until like a couple years ago. We would have 2018, World Indoors was in Birmingham. And then the next year, World Cross was in Aarhus. And then World Athletics has decided to overhaul the schedule and they're moving the World Half. They call the World Half, they change it to the World Road Running Championships. They move that to the fall. And then they decide we're going to have the World Indoors and World Cross Country both in even years in the same year, which I guess having World Cross in the spring of a non-Olympic year, so I guess the, you know, the off year, what we would call it, like 2026, I guess that would help. And it's the overlap between World Cross and World Indoors, there aren't that many athletes who'll be doing both, but it is going to be some of the very best athletes who, you know, who you would want at each event. But the fundamental problem here, Robert, is that the Olympics and the World Championships and the track are just so much more important for everyone in the sport than these other ones. And there's just a belief, whether it's justified or not, that you can't run world, like running world cross country is going to cut into your preparations for either making the Olympic team or running well at the Olympics or world championships. And in some cases, I don't think that's entirely unjustified. Like people who have to qualify last year, I asked, you know, Why do we have people like Joe Klecker, who was a great cross-country runner in college, likes running cross-country? Why is he not doing World Cross? Well, he wanted to focus on the 10. The same thing this year. Grant Fisher says he's doing the 10, and that's his priority, and that's why he's not doing World Indoors, and that's why he's not doing World Cross. And I as long as the Olympics and World Championships on the track are the most important thing, and way more important than everything else, it's going to be difficult to encourage athletes to run World Cross. And that's why they're going with the schedule. They're talking about these changes in schedule. They're trying to fit in a time of year when the best athletes in the sport have some time to do this and aren't worried about qualifying for World Indoors, or sorry, qualifying for Worlds on the track or qualifying for the Olympics. And they're thinking maybe early January is the best time to accomplish that.
Historically, it's been too late in the season. Me starting to get in the way of the indoor of the outdoor track season, so that doesn't make sense to me. But I've got a solution to that. I really think you need to make the qualifying, the 10,000 qualifying, extremely dependent on World Cross Country. So most of the spots would be taken in the cross country race. They're both 10,000 meter distance. I know it's not the same damn surface, but whatever. You go there and you earn the spot for the country. Period. So you would say we have 27 spots. Okay. First 20 people across the line at World Cross Country, they earn, you know, from different countries, maximum three per country. They're earning a spot for their country in the 10,000. And then, so, you know, there we go. There's the Olympic spots. And then those countries can assign those spots, you know, based on trials if they want it to somebody else. And so, you know, it would actually go down farther than 20. It would go down to like 30 because you'd have six Kenyans, six Ethiopians, Ugandans, et cetera. And then I would be willing to handle a few spots. So you make sure that you don't miss some freak of nature who was injured or from some obscure country and he couldn't run world cross in his spot. You know, you hold out like five spots. You know, there's 25 guys and I think it's 27. So you could do 22. Let's just say it's 25. It's either top 20 at world cross. That's it. And then five people from the track. There we go. Then everyone's going to show up, or at least the best people from the country better show up.
Yeah. I actually like that, Robert. I'm not sure if I want to go as heavy on world cross as you are, but like there might be a different number that works, but that way, I mean, that would convince a lot more athletes to run it. If you're only giving like five spots available qualifying on the track, you're saying, hey, the main avenue is by earning a spot for your country at world cross. Then you're going to get all these Americans saying, well, I have to take this into my own hands. And how do I do it? I run world cross. Now, obviously, some people complain and say, well, cross country race is different than the Olympics. And yeah, of course it is. But at the same time, this is a good way of boosting world cross and making it into an event where the best people show up. And it's just, I don't know, it's all running. Like, if this is just the way you qualify for the Olympics, I actually don't mind that. Like, this is a way to keep the 10,000 meters more relevant in the Olympics as well. So I like this idea. It makes a hell of a lot more sense than the current system, which is eight spots go to athletes who run these world cross-country gold tour races in which you can just game the system and go to these places. Like, it gives a huge advantage to athletes based in Spain or Western Europe because that's where almost all the races are. I like your idea a lot more, and I actually think it's one of the best ideas I've heard recently, because that way you're killing two birds with one stone and you're making world cross more entertaining, and you're also keeping, you know, kind of the excitement of the Olympics as well. So all these people saying, oh, I can't do world cross because it's conflicting with my Olympic qualification. Well, now it's the same thing. Now you have to run it to qualify for the Olympics. So I kind of like that idea.
Thank you. And you're saying that cross country is different than 10,000. So what? The Olympic 10,000 is a hell of a lot different than a 10,000 meter time trial in Britain or in California, you know, under the lights and 50 degree weather with no rain and pace light. I mean,
same thing. Yeah, Olympic marathons. The Valencia marathon is nothing like the Olympic marathon in Paris. So, but that's where most people qualify. So I think that's a fair point.
My other option would be also to, I think that's option one. You also hold the European, you cancel the European cross country championships and you hold it within the European and in the world cross country. And you score the Europeans as what you have the overall scoring. And then you have the European scoring. And that way all the Europeans show up. So there you got two birds. You necessarily might not even necessarily need to do that, because if you have the Olympic qualification, everyone's going to show up. But I like that too.
I don't like that. You're going to be handing out like what, gold medals to the person who finishes like 17th in the individual race? It just seems silly to me. But I do think I'm not like I respect the SEBCO and the people at World Athletics are trying to find a way to gin up the European participation, because Euros do show up to Eurocross and take it fairly seriously. You get a lot of countries sending a lot of athletes. You just don't get that Eurocross. Like, I will give credit. Great Britain sent full teams. Spain sent some athletes, some teams. France sent a few athletes, but that's really it. Those are the only ones who took it that seriously. So, and I want to give credit to like USA, Canada, and Australia, as well as the African nations, Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, because they're the ones, they send teams no matter where this event's held every time. So credit to them. But yeah, because I do think this is a great event. World Cross Country, three of the four I've been to were amazing. Kampala was terrific. Had raucous fans in the home straight for Jacob Kiplimo, and then for Cheptegei, you know, who made his big bold move. 2019 in Aarhus, awesome course, beer tent, terrific races. That was a lot of fun. In 2023 Bathurst, the Aussie fans, they showed out and it was a good atmosphere. I liked the course as well, going through the vineyard. Like those three were all terrific events. World Cross and Belgrade, I know you don't want me to crap on it. I don't need to do a whole diatribe on it, but it was not designed with the spectators at all in mind, which I view as a massive issue because spectators are part of what makes cross country unique. You're running back and forth. You're kind of involved in the race. Well, in NCAA cross, you might get 5,000 people there, but it feels like 20,000 because they're constantly running back and forth and lining almost every part of the course and creating that intense environment. And yep. That's one of the things that separates cross country from other events.
I know that
coming and stubbier at all.
People are worried about, you know, security, but I think it should be a must have at any world cross country. You let the people run on the course, like hold them back when the runners are there, and then you open it and they run to the next spot. That's the funnest part about these events. It, you know, like it's like the Tour de France when the fans are on the side on the big hills and they're screaming and they have their flags. And then, you know, once every 10 years, somebody does hit a runner and knock them down. Not good, but I just think that you make it like just a thrilling sporting event that you don't get anywhere else. That's what I was thinking, maybe put her on New Year's or Christmas, like right before Christmas. Could you don't need a huge number of people, but if you could get like, you know, 500,000 people worldwide to fly to some cool place, take the kids to the race and then go on vacation afterwards, you know, for Christmas break or something.
500,000 people coming to World Cross. Come on, Robert, that's not happening.
500 or 1,000, I said.
Oh, 500 or 1,000. Yeah, yeah. But look at the Tour de France, right? People camp out on these stages to see the peloton come through once, but they just make a day out of it. So, well, like the recipe, you know, you need the right people in charge to do it, but it's kind of like what you have for Aarhus. Just have some beer available, make it so that people can go run around a little bit, just have fun and, you know, yeah, hire the security on the course to make sure that people are crossing at the right times and places. But I've been to every NCAA cross country I've been to has been terrific. And it's because the fans are always there and they're allowed to run around and, you know, get on different spots and especially get in the finishing area, which the fact that there were no fans permitted near the finish is ridiculous. I mean, could you imagine like, in what other sport, you're like, oh yeah, hey, we're having these championships. You can't see, like, we'll kick you out though before the final 10 minutes. You don't get to see who wins. That's basically what you're doing by blocking off spectator access to the finish line in cross country.
All right, John, let's turn to the biggest. Oh, one last thing, World Cross. Congrats to some of these people that did run. Anthony Camarera of America. I'm fully going to admit, it's like, if you're not contending for an NCAA title, I don't normally know your name. He ran at Miami of Ohio and Ole Miss. He's pretty damn good. 338, 1326. Was on their DMR second place team last year. Now, he never made NCAAs individually in track. He was like just off All-American in cross country, 52nd. But he got 8th at USA's. A couple of guys turned down the spot. Now he's 52nd in world. So, that, you know, he got to wear the USA vest. So congrats to him. But I would say,
I remember NCAA indoors, he had a great ankle leg for Ole Miss in 2023. I'd never heard of him before that, but I think he had the fastest ankle leg or something in Albuquerque. I was really impressed and expecting big things. And I think he was like injured outdoors or something like that. But he, you know, that performance stood out at NCAA indoors. We should also, I mean, give a shout out to Wayne Calardi. This is 15th place. It's interesting because she went out with the lead pack, which, like we said, was star-studded with these amazing Kenyans, Beatrice Chebet, Agnes Njedich, Lillian Rengaruk, all these women. She's going right with them, and she was still in 7th place with one lap to go. They run 5 2K laps, and she fades. She was dealing with the heat, just went out a little too hard, and the heat got to her, but held on for 15th place. I just love one that she ran this race at all. How it's very rare to see someone, an American as good as Calardi in the form she was in, actually running World Cross. You know, she's coming off a 30-33, an American record in the half marathon. Usually those types of athletes are not running World Cross, and certainly when they're not in that kind of shape. So from American perspective. So it was great to see her run, and then I love that she went for it. It's a world championship, and she's not out there to run conservative and just kick some people down at the end. She was going out there and running for against the best of the world and taking them on head on. And yeah, she ran out of steam a little bit, but 15th is still the best performance by a U.S. woman since Alefine Tuohimaa in 2017. deserves big props for going out there. And then I guess the one other person we should talk about, Robert, is your boy, Anthony Rotich. He was the top American in the men's race, finished 22nd overall. He just ran 27.08 at the 10, and he said the last two laps he felt that in his legs. He's just like, yeah, I think I wasn't totally recovered from the 10, but he's had a pretty good winter season. Second USA Cross, 27.08 in the 10, now 22nd at World Cross. Does this change your mind at all about his Olympic prospects? He says he's sticking in the steeplechase. You know, what are your thoughts about Rotich coming out of this?
Well, I was hoping he'd be like five places ahead of fire, just like Galati, but I feel like if I ran 27.08 before I'm hitting the track in the steeple, I'm pretty excited about it. So I think he's got a really good Olympic chance. We know one spot's going to a supporters club member, Dan Mikowski of the Army WCAP, Air Force WCAP. So there's only two spots left. By the way, John, you know, I often butcher names, Shalane Flanagan and Usain Bolt and Don Michalski or whatever, Dan Michalski or Mikowski or
Michalski. Michalski.
But I got an email here from a female visitor, letsrun.com, John. Hello. They know that you give me a hard time consistently on the show, and Weldon for our mispronunciations. John, we speak it with a Texas accent. You know, that's what we're saying. I'm just going to say Jenny. I don't want to give her last name out. I am from Ireland, and a few months ago, Jonathan completely bastardized the pronunciation of, I mean, do I have to be able to say her name? Fiona Lua McCormick's name.
Fiona Lua is how I said it, probably, which is probably wrong. Let her continue the email. I've already got a rebuttal, but let's
I think
ahead.
It was on a podcast after the Valencia Marathon, but I can't find it. It might be a bit fun to call him out. Ask Athol Dinahy for the correct pronunciation. I would say it's Finn Ula.
Finula? Okay. My defense is that's an Irish name, and she's not as accomplished as someone like Shalane Flanagan. Like, Shalane Flanagan's been in the running world, the U.S. running world, for 20 years at this point. You covered her entire career. Like, it's not that hard. Like, when you've been exposed to it that many times, you should know how to say it.
You're like my wife. You think I don't really, I'll just sometimes, she's like, you're not really listening. And it's true. I don't listen when you correct me. I don't even know which word do I mispronounce, Shalane or the last name?
Yeah, you say Shalane instead of Shalane. And it's like Courtney Frerix. You know, you Shalane. Call her Fryrix. The thing about these mispronunciations is it's not like a one-off name. Like, the only time I'm talking about Fionnuala McCormack or Finula McCormack, is maybe she made the Olympics of the Valencia Marathon, or maybe she won Eurocross. She's not an accomplished runner. She is. She just doesn't come up on the podcast as regularly as someone like Shalane Flanagan or Courtney Frerix, who are covering day in, day out. Those ones, when you're repeatedly exposed to it, like, we learn how to spell Ingebrigtsen because we cover him so much. You know, if you're mispronouncing Jakob Ingebrigtsen or Usain Bolt, who is the most famous track runner probably ever, yeah, you take some shit for it. But if you're saying it's an Irish woman who we don't really cover that much and with a very Irish name, to me, that's a more defensible mispronunciation. So that's my defense. But I do think it is. I'll cop to it. I'm sure I've screwed up many names that aren't ones I'm exposed to on an everyday basis. So I don't claim to be perfect, but I do think we owe it to the ones we cover regularly to try to pronounce their names correctly.
And I owe it to the people that I work with and live with on a daily basis to listen to them when they criticize me instead of shut it off. So I realize I've been doing the same thing to you that my wife complains about. So I didn't even realize. So I was saying Shalane, like Shay, when it's Shalane. Okay, I got
correct.
That. Now what? I don't mispronounce Usain Bolt, do I?
You just did it.
Okay, Weldon does it. Usain is Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
U versus U. Okay, so now I've listened. Usain Shalane. Okay, now that I've learned that, I have no excuse. But literally, you've probably corrected me 50 times over the years, and I've never bothered to learn it. But
okay, so it wasn't that you were being it wasn't that you were being insensitive to the athletes. It was rather you were just being insensitive to me and not listening when I corrected you. So
correct. But I actually like the criticism because a lot of criticism is people are like, oh, you're racist. You don't know the Kasim Kenyon's name. So I liked it. I'm like, okay, I don't even know America's Tough Female Marathoner, white American blonde woman's name either. Like people sometimes criticize things with false motives. They're just getting the name. So anyways, all right, let's move on to the biggest story of last week. I can't believe we're 40 minutes in, we haven't talked to about it. Olympic champion John Ruth Jabet, Olympic steeplechase champion Ruth Jabet, has remained undefeated in the marathon. Okay, I'm kidding about this being the biggest story, but I did bring this up, John. You know, she cheated. She won the 2016 Olympic steeple, then got busted for EPO. Now she's back. She's apparently, she's ran a 2:23 debut last year in December, now has won another race in 2:26. The only reason I'm bringing this up, John, is I'm trying to help you out. You have like a photographic memory. I think someday you're going to make millions of dollars in German on Jeopardy. But the two marathons she's won, I want you to tell me where they are. This race was in Zhengkai, Zhengkai. Where is Zhengkai?
Spell that out again.
Zhengkai. I'll put it at the top of the Google Doc so you can see it.
Zhengkai. It's like a weird spelling of Shanghai. Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, Z-H-E, usually that's China. So I'm just going to assume it's China. They have a lot of marathons there.
Correct. It's in China. Well, I didn't think it's some different pronunciation of Shanghai. I apologize. Now, the second city, you're one for one, John. I should have shut my sound effect machine. I could have gone bing. Mersin. Mersin.
I'm wondering if you're trying to trick me and this is actually China again.
I'll give you a hint. Both these cities are perfect for a former doper. Countries that they're in.
Okay, now I'm thinking.
I'll tell you right now, it's not in China.
No. I was already leaning this way, and I think I'm going to have to say it just to be fair. Before you gave me that hint, I was thinking Turkey, so I'm going to guess Turkey.
Wow. Bing, bing, you are correct. It looks beautiful. Mersin, Turkey, it's a port and port city in southern Turkey. Population 955,000. I'm not sure if actually Zhengkai or whatever I said before is actually a city. I can't find. Before I thought I found it, now I'm missing. But anyways, so now that's not really the most important thing. The most important thing that happened last week, besides more cross country,
Zhengkai is a Chinese actor and television personality. He graduated from the Shanghai Theater Academy in 2008. That's what you get when you search Zhengkai on Wikipedia, Robert.
I know. So that's what's confusing me. I think the most important thing that happened last week in the running world, besides World Cross Country, was our famed April Fool's page. In case you guys don't know what April Fool's is, look it up. Play like jokes on people and you write like fake stories and act like they're real and people fall for it. And I mean, we've had some famous things in the past. What was the thing that was really famous? Like the most famous thing? Like, didn't some like national news agency fall for one of our stories?
So 2015. This was the first one that I was working for Let's Run for. That was back when Eric Jenkins and Edward Cheserek were dominating the NCAA. And I wrote a release saying they're skipping the NCAA regionals and they're going to run the Prefontaine Classic, a match race against each other instead. Because remember, indoors, Jenkins beat Cheserek, but then Cheserek said that he let him win. So there's a lot of drama about who was really better. And I said it was going to be settled at the Pre-Classic at Hayward Field. One-on-one, and then the Pac-12 network picked this up and it was on their bottom line. Like, one of their news things was saying Cheserek and Jenkins will race in a match race at the Pre-Classic. So we got them. I think there was another one. I don't know if you, was there something like Justin Gatlin? Did you mention that he had, there was some sort of drugs thing. I think it might've been before he was suspended and his dad said, you know, he was going to kill you or something like that. Do you remember the details of this?
I don't remember exactly. But I know it's happened more than once that people went into it. Anyways, apparently, you know, I wrote an article about we're unveiling new t-shirts. I shouldn't say I wrote an article, but
I think it can be inferred. The post-nuptial shut-off one was a Rojo special.
That can be inferred, conferred. Why would that? Don't talk about my wife that way. Anyways, there's a famous threat.
That's not what I meant. I meant that the subject matter of the article was something that you would write. I wasn't saying that it affects you. I was just saying it seems like an article and a thread you'd be interested in.
There was a famous thread 17 years ago about some guy complaining that the amount of times that he was intimate with his wife has gone down greatly since his marriage. And there's 71 pages written about it. And I said that we were going to unveil a shirt. Now, the last couple of years in April Fool's, I have put out mock t-shirt designs. If enough people buy them, I actually make them. That's how I made the Burrito Track Club t-shirt. I've had a few people buy the post-nuptial shutoff. Not as many as I would have thought. So if you want the shirt, go to shop.letsrun.com today. Only $18. But if I don't get enough orders, I'm going to cancel them all. But I think it's great. John, I said, John, why aren't these selling? And you said, well, what married guy's going to wear this around town? His wife's going to freaking strangle him. I said, good point, John. My thought process is you would get this like for a bachelor party. You buy 10, you take him to the bachelor party, make the guy wear them. You go out in the town with them. So, you know, I guess I could make like, man, the problem is that my shirts are such high quality. If I don't make at least 50, it's too expensive. So I was saying I can make 10 and just like send them around a bachelor party and then send them to another bachelor party.
You're looking for a very narrow audience here, Robert, because you're looking for someone who goes to Let's Run, has been around long enough to know the post-nuptial shutoff thread, and then is also involved in a bachelor party that's coming up fairly soon that he could order it for a bunch of people and maybe have them get the reference. I think there aren't that many people walking the earth right now who that applies to, so that's probably why your shirts didn't sell.
Yeah. So other articles we had up, though. Amazon reveals, this is the one genre, I loved it. It paid Jakob Ingebrigtsen and Josh Kerr $1 million each to talk trash. And then if you clicked on the article, it was even funnier. Like they claim that an Amazon executive purposely sneezed on Jakob to get him sick for Worlds to make him more interesting. And that they're actually best friends. They have dinner all the time in Albuquerque. And they recently did a workout together. This is how it ended, John. I love your ending. Just the inside baseball aspect of this ending. Kerr finished the workout by running an all-out 400-meter up in 49 seconds. Ingebrigtsen had been right with Kerr until the final turn, when he tripped and sprained his ankle on a wayward tennis ball. And then you ended the article with a quote from Ingebrigtsen. Unfortunately, when you run workouts with a blindfold on, it's much harder to detect loose obstacles. Very clever, John. Very clever.
Thanks, Robert. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I thought we'd get people... Usually, at least one of our articles, people start posting about it on Twitter and saying, like, I can't believe this is happening, or this is ridiculous. And I feel like none of them went viral this year because of that. Or actually, maybe the Taylor Swift one went semi-viral, because apparently it did show up in some of the news results. It was saying that Taylor Swift and Ryan Krauser are now dating and that she was going to come to the pre-classic and watch him throw the shot. But I feel like we failed this year in actually getting people to fall for one of these jokes. So I'm going to have to redouble my efforts and try harder to come up with a premise that is both somewhat believable, but also very funny. So, you know,
we should tweet them out.
2025.
I don't know. Do we even tweet them out? I think we just put up the homepage. I haven't even read all these articles yet. Nike announces new $5,000 running shoe. I like this one. Weldon wrote it. World cross country to have live alligator in the mud pit. And they said that the event had to be moved from Florida State, Tallahassee, because they don't like Florida Gators. That's their rival NCAA school. So that was interesting. If they had actual alligators in the mud pit, John, like it would get astronomical ratings, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, whenever there's like danger of people dying, people do tend to watch that. So it wouldn't be safe, but I think that would crank up the ratings significantly by having live gators in the mud pit.
What if we like just tape their mouths shut?
I think what they do is they'll like cork their teeth. You know, they'll put their teeth, put stuff around their teeth so that when they bite you, it's not as bad. Or taping their mouth shut. I mean, I feel like if you're taping the mouth shut, what's the point of having gators? That's part of the thing of gators is that
I don't want the animal rights people being upset. Can we take their teeth out temporarily and then put them back in like with dentures?
I feel like that would be incredibly painful. I mean, I guess you can use Novocaine or whatever. That's really too complicated, taking out and removing. Maybe you can find gators who have already lost their teeth or something, or you feed them sugar cubes for a year and their teeth will rot and fall out. I don't know. This is all fairly complicated for an April Fool's
joke. You said we didn't trick anybody. I got a text message from a supporters club member. I'm not going to reveal his last name. Ross. Normally I do say his last name, but I don't know if he wants this out there or not. Like, he's like, hey. And I looked at that Google Analytics. Like, the most popular one was this Taylor Swift article. She's dating Ryan Krauser. And I was like, that's at the bottom of the page. I haven't even read that one yet. And then I'm like, oh, did it get picked up in Google? And my buddy texts me. And it's a screenshot from his wife's mobile phone. She's gone to Google News. She's typed in Taylor Swift. And this article is like number 3. So I was like, oh, that's cool. We tricked Google. And then I thought, wait. Does your wife like wake up every day and just Google Taylor Swift in the news? And he's got like 2 daughters that are like probably like 7 and 9. So he's like, you don't know what it's like to live with 2 girls. Yes. He's like, probably. I don't know. She clearly did it today. This is where she saw it. So,
Robert, you realize Taylor Swift has a massive fan base, but also a very passionate fan base. Like the top 5% of Taylor Swift fans are probably more passionate about Taylor Swift than the top 5% of most fans are about their subject of their devotion. So I bet a bunch of people have Google News alerts for Taylor Swift. I'm not sure if this shoot showed up as like a Google News alert. I mean, there are just so many people.
See, this is the problem. This is the problem with the Let's Run business. People, we do not want you going to Google and typing in running news or using Google News alerts. We need you each and every day to get out a browser and old-fashioned go to your homepage. Or if you don't have this as your homepage, you type in www.letsrun.com. They should ban Google News, John. It's hurting my business. But should I start a Taylor Swift aggregation site like TaylorSwiftNews.com?
I imagine there are probably already many Taylor Swift aggregation sites that have considered this idea before you, Robert. But yeah, if we can have journalistic license to just make up news about Taylor Swift every day, you'd probably get a lot of hits in the short term, and then people would figure out you're unreliable. Unfortunately, this is only something we can pull once a year on April 1st.
And I thought in this article, which was written by Let's Run visitor Tim Silva, who always sends us great April Fools articles, I thought like the intricacies of the article, like yours, John, like that question, that quote about the blindfold was amazing. I thought that he really thought this out in the sense of he quoted Swift describing why she's dating Ryan Krauser. I'd frankly become bored and restless. Channel surfing one day, I happened to see the big guy throw for gold in Glasgow. Now there's a man with style and a sport I could really stick with. So my people reached out to his people. We soon met thereafter, and we've been an item ever since. Rye Rye, that's what I call him now. He can bench press way more than Kelsey. Plus, he doesn't end up covered in bruises and incredibly sore after 5 days of competition. But my favorite part is its end, John. Although I didn't like that he took a ding at my city. Why would I prefer to spend my Sundays in dull NFL cities like Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore, and Cleveland? Or in glamorous Diamond League destinations like Paris, Monaco, London, Rome, and Zurich? Duh. And I thought about that. Like, I never realized, like, the Diamond, like, people are talking about, like, oh, we got a revolutionized track. It's not popular. You and I are big fans of the Diamond League. Think about the cities that it's held in. Like, they are.
I know. Cool. She forgot the biggest ones. Eugene, Oregon. Suzhou, China. Like, just kidding. But no, that is a big selling point. The Diamond League, it's awesome. Like, if you go to these meets, it's fun to go to Paris or Rome or Zurich or Oslo, you know? That's one of the reasons I think the Diamond League is good. And, you know, I guess we can talk about that at a later date about the Diamond League. I did enjoy that part of it.
Oh, but I forgot one other thing to make World Cross more popular. Obviously, you need more money. Like, it just sounds cool if it's $1 million first prize versus like 40,000. But I was thinking, even if you had tons of money, like 10 million, like would that really change anything for like the top American who might finish 15th or 20th? But I was thinking we should have a world cross country tax. Every track and field event in the world sends $1. They have the option to add $1, not per person, just per meet. And they send it to World Athletics. And then there's so many meets, you'd easily have $1 million and we would have more money.
I'm just shocked you haven't suggested we take money out of Max Siegel's salary to cover the cost of World Cross Country. That's usually your go-to, even though you've allocated that money about 10 times over at this point. All right. The other thing about April Fools I wanted to talk about, though, Robert, is we do have this section that I always enjoy putting together every year. Truth is stranger than fiction. And it's the headlines that some of them would have sounded like an April Fool's joke if you included them a year earlier, but they all actually happened in the previous 12 months. Like one of them, unsponsored Tracksmith athlete. What, I don't know why someone changed this. Unsponsored Tracksmith athlete with no shoe sponsor smokes Noah Lyles to win USA 100 meters title. That's redundant. I don't know who was in charge of writing that thing. Unsponsored with no shoe sponsor. Yeah, we get it. But anyway, that happened. Krevon Charleston won the US title in the 100 meters. A guy that not many American track fans would have heard of this time in 2023. Woman runs 2:11 marathon. Yes, this happened. Tigges Seffer in Berlin took more than 2 minutes off the world record in the marathon. NBC shows women's golf and America's Got Talent rerun instead of the US track championships. Yeah, for the first time since 2006, USA Outdoors didn't have any live television coverage on NBC. So those are wild. But I got to say, my favorite ones was just the Safwan Hassan section. Like, this woman, what she did the last 12 months, I still don't understand how she won the London Marathon. She goes in, she did her training during Ramadan. She didn't really train for a marathon. She just kind of did a few longer workouts, but she goes in, she wasn't expecting to win. Her coach is downplaying her chances. She pauses halfway through, but she starts to stretch out her leg. Paula Radcliffe and Steve Cram on the London Marathon BBC broadcast is saying she needs to drop out. What is she doing? She could do long-term damage here. She somehow runs back on the pack, catches them. They're 2 miles from the finish. Instead of just, she looks like she's going to miss her final drink. Instead of just letting it go, she runs to the side, does a 90-degree turn, almost gets taken out by a lead motorcycle, grabs the bottle, and then outsprints and wins the race. It's one of the most ridiculous performances I've ever seen. And then she decides on the eve of the world championship, she's going to triple at Worlds again, runs all three events, medals in the 1500, 6 weeks later, runs 2:13 and wins the Chicago Marathon. Like, she just did things this year. I was like, I never thought I'd see a woman do this. And it was really fun to watch. I think she's one of the more entertaining athletes, but I couldn't believe what Safwan Hassan did the last 12 months.
It was amazing. Also, Peyton Jordan 10,000 has only one finisher. Runner breaks North American 1500-meter record, but not American 1500-meter record. That's because Nagusa's record counts as an area record, but not an American record, right?
USATF is not going to ratify it because they recognize Bernard Legat's 327 as the American record.
Utah high school team wins NXN after losing state meet. Yeah, I'm looking at this Tracksmith title. They shouldn't have put Tracksmith in. I mean, we love Tracksmith because Walden's college buddy did it. My wife buys so much of their gear, I'm almost bankrupt. But it should just say you can't say unsponsored Tracksmith athlete. That doesn't make that's like contradictory, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not taking the blame on this because my original title was Tracksmith athlete with no shoe sponsor wins USA 100 meter title. So
yeah, I would just put,
well, he's not here to defend himself, but I didn't write that headline.
It is kind of crazy. As much as Noah Lyles was hyped, you've got a guy with no shoe sponsor who just destroyed him. But Lyles got the last laugh at Worlds, obviously.
Well, also, Krevon Charleston was hurt at Worlds. So he got hurt at relay camp, so he wasn't 100%. Anyway. Oh, I mean, one of the strangest sagas, this didn't happen in the last 12 months, but it was reported on in the last 12 months. Kenyan Olympian and NCAA record holder tries to evade doping test at Kenyan Champs by switching identities with another person in the bathroom. That's what Michael Cerruti did at the Kenyan Champs a couple of years ago. Just one of the great doping sagas of our time. And he was eventually banned for it. But I can't believe he tried to do that and tried to get away with it, but it didn't work. All right, Robert. Track season starting up. I mean, I guess we've had outdoor meets like the 10 and stuff, but I feel like this most recent weekend, a lot of the college kids started competing again. We had like the Stanford invite. One of the performances that caught my eye, though, was Sam Whitmarsh of Texas A&M. And he ran at LSU a 144.46. Moves him to number 8 all-time on the NCAA list. Guys right in front of him, Emmanuel Correa, the reigning Olympic champion, Will Sumner, reigning NCAA champ, Jim Ryan, Olympic silver medalist, and Bryce Hopel, the world indoor champion. Pretty good company. This is a guy, he didn't even make NCAA indoors, though he won the SEC. He didn't run fast enough. And suddenly he's a 144 guy, and he's running 144 in March, March 30th. This was a PB by almost 2 full seconds. We always see this. There's some college kid will come out and either make the Olympic team or contend for the Olympic team. And someone we haven't heard of. I hadn't heard of Sam Whitmarsh until just now. And suddenly I'm like, could this guy make the Olympic team? You're running 144. I mean, his chances, probably not, because there are other good runners in this country. It's very hard to make an Olympic team, but I feel like we've now got our dark horse, if you could even call him a dark horse, because he just ran 144. But I was blown away by this performance. And for what it's worth, he also has a killer mustache. I mean, just awesome.
It's interesting that you noticed that. But well, I noticed it randomly. I was on the Coaches Association website, USTFCCCA, and they had the rankings. I don't know why I was looking at that. And I saw Texas A&M was the number one ranked college men's team. I was like, what? They were only 6th indoors. I'm like, how could they be ranked? Like, I know indoors and outdoors aren't exactly the same, and a 4x1 would help a sprint school. So I was like, what's going on? And then I saw this Sam Whitmarsh guy. So congrats to him. I was looking at it. I'm like, well, what do you do indoors? I said he wins SEC. I mean, if you win SECs, like, you're damn good. I mean, last year, it was very similar in the situation. We had the guy that won SEC indoors only get into NCAA indoors after someone scratched, right, John?
Yeah, I think so.
Help me out with the name. I've already forgotten the sensation.
Will Sumner. I just mentioned him.
So, and Sam needed a little help this year. He was tied for 16th. So, do you know how they break that? Do they flip a coin? Do they go to your second best time? So
I assume second best time would be the fairest way to do it, but I honestly don't know how they do it.
So, yeah, I think if you're running 144, you got a shot. There was another big PR at the Florida relays. Josh Hoey. I think there's like 3 Hoey brothers. He went pro out of high school. I know he's coached by Terrence Mahan for a while. His dad's good friends with him. Apparently, it doesn't matter. His dad's like loaded, but he went pro out of high school. I would have gone to college. That's what I would have done. But he's kind of like, he was a great high school runner, muddled around. I mean, he's been running, 148.0 in 2018, but then 147, 147. That's 2021, 2022, 148, 2023. So he's now 24 years of age, and you're like, kind of, what's the point? Well, he runs 147.0 indoors and gets 3rd at USA's. And then in his outdoor opener, he ran 145.5. I know that's, the Sam guy's a second faster than that, right, John? But that's a 1.5 second full PB. Dominates the Florida relays. So congrats to him.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was impressed because, like you said, Robert, this is a guy, ton prior to high school. He set the high school indoor record. I mean, he ran 147.67 in the winter of 2018. His senior year of high school. And he barely ran faster than that as a professional. But until this year, his fastest time had been 147.36 147.26 from indoors in 2020. That was his pro PB before this year. He had a full year in 2022 where he was just running consistently like 147s and 148s. Last year, he ran 148 and 150 in his 2 races. And at some point, I'm just like, okay, he peaked in high school, time to move on. But I guess this is the adage, talent doesn't go away. You run 147 indoors as a high schooler, you're pretty damn good. And he's only 24 years old. So I commend him for sticking with it. And it's interesting. Now he's run 145.5 and it's March and he's starting to think, wow, you know, this is finally the high school talent shining through. So I'd be interested to know what his setup now is. Has he changed coaches or that sort of thing? But, good for the guy for sticking with it and finally seeing some results.
Yeah, it would be interesting because I think he had Mahan coaching. I think he had Gags coaching at one point. I mean, it's not like he had bad coaches. So if you're responsible for the breakthrough and it's legally done, let us know. Robert at letsrun.com. John, do you know who's second in that race? It was your guy, your boy.
My boy? I have a boy?
John doesn't root for athletes. I do. It's such a cool story. Parvesh Khan, the Indian for Florida, ran a big PB for second. He ran 146.12.
Well, I guess we're talking about like the U.S. Olympic team in the 800. One of my bold predictions at the start of the year is that Will Sumner was going to win an Olympic medal. So supposedly now Bryce Hopple, maybe we're only talking about one spot on the team. If I'm going to go by that prediction, I think Bryce Hopple's going to make the team. It's going to be Clayton Murphy and Isaiah Harris and Sam Whitmarsh and maybe even Josh Hoey battling it out for that other spot. But yeah, I think the bigger point there is that Will Sumner's spot is certainly not guaranteed on the Olympic team, but yeah, it's good. The men's 800 at the Olympic trials is always a great race, so I'm excited for that one. And it's good that we've got some, you know, younger athletes coming through as well. We always do. You know, there's probably going to be another college kid, but
I mean, we went I guess Will Sumner was a true freshman last year.
Negative split in the 144 at NCAAs?
Yeah, it was 144.2. I forgot about the negative split, but. By the way, if you're wondering what he's up to, I heard he was training in Australia with some help from the guy that always posts on Justin Rinaldi, always posting on the Let's Run forum. Maybe Justin, if you're listening, let's get an update. Because like I know this was like the big kind of first weekend for people, but to be honest, an 800, if he didn't open up in the next 2 to 3 weeks, that's a major red flag for me.
All right, because your whole thing is you need to run 25 800s in a year.
I think you need to run a lot. And it's just time to start opening up. You know, the trials are what? Three months away, right?
Less than 3 months. June 21st. 2.5 months.
Yeah, so you want to get an opener in, then have one or two good efforts. You know?
It is around that time, yeah. You know, you start to see people running off events, so they won't run stuff seriously. But yeah, you know, he didn't race indoors, so it'd be interesting to see. I saw I think it was Instagram or Twitter with a Formula Kersey thing. I saw Sydney McLaughlin Livroni was included. They were doing baton practice, I think it was just their way of making 300 reps more fun, was they'd hand off a baton. I was like, I saw a thing, Mo, and I saw some of the other athletes in the group. I'm like, are they even going to show Sydney? Like, I feel like we've gotten no update about is she running, but. She took a handoff. She appears to be in, you know, at least practicing right now. So that's the only Sydney update you're probably going to get for another 2 months until she runs her first race.
And Florida Relays, they had a couple 4x1s, at least one. I mean, it was wild. You had Grant Holloway in the leadoff leg. I think he was running on the same team with Arian Knighton, who ran an incredible third leg on the turn. So a race taken Twitter would be like, what, why, you know, Arian Knighton has to be at run the turn at the Olympics. And then Noah Lyles was on another team running an anchor, but Noah botched the handoff. I don't know if it was Noah's fault or the other guy's fault. So just the amount of talent they have just showing up at these events to run, you know, for free. I think at Texas Relays, there was a world's best in the women's 4x200 with crazy stuff.
Well, yeah, the amount of sprint talent, global sprint talent that's based in Florida and Texas is crazy. That's just where a lot of the very best athletes in the world are based. So if they are going to do a relay, it's probably going to be one of those meets. And it wasn't even a world best in the 4x2 for women because they weren't from all the same countries. But we need a term like there's a world best, which is like world record for non-world record events. And then you've got what would we call a relay time when it's four people from different countries? Do you just call it the fastest time ever? Like
you should just be world best. The concept that it has to be from the same country is just stupid.
All right. One other thing, Robert, I wanted to talk about is we had a high school record in the girls 5K last week. Elizabeth Leachman, who is a junior at Boney Champion High School. She's a junior or sophomore, Robert?
I thought she was sophomore.
Yeah, she's only, wow, she's only a sophomore. How do you pronounce this team with this name? Is it Boney? Robert, it's a Texas school. Do you know how to say this city? B-O-E-R-N-E.
I say Burn.
Burn?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Anyway, you're only a sophomore. Just broke the high school record for 5,000 meters, 1525.27. Natalie Cook was the old record holder. And Sarah Lodge Butler from Run As Well just wrote a nice profile on her and her coach and the situation. They're trying to handle the expectations and the pressure and the attention that come with being a high school superstar. And we've seen, I thought Caitlin Toohey's coach and her parents did a good job of it when she was in high school a few years ago. But naturally, you are just going to get a lot of attention when you're a phenom like this. So I thought it was a good story. But what interested me is her training. And here's the excerpt Sarah wrote. Her weekly schedule is similar to that of Parker Valby, the University of Florida star, who is a four-time NCAA champion. Leachman's routine includes only 3 or 4 days each week of running for about 30 miles total. She'll do a 90-minute session of cross-training on the days she doesn't run. On the days she does, she'll put in an extra 30 minutes of cross-training after the workout. And I wanted you to put on your coaching hat here and help me understand this, because it seems like all of these young phenoms now, or not all of them, but a lot of them on the women's side in the United States are just super low mileage, but they do a lot of cross training and somehow producing crazy results. Parker Valby's one, now Elizabeth Leachman, and then Natalie Cook, who was her predecessor of the high school record holder. She was running like 10 or 15 miles a week with a lot of cross training, getting these phenomenal results. And do you think there's some sort of, is there a common, like, they're all phenoms, they're all women, they're all cross-training a lot. Like, why is this happening? Is it kind of a coincidence? Is it that running isn't as important as we thought, that you can get a lot of that value from cross-training? Like, why do you have a theory as to why we're seeing this so often now with some of these young women's phenoms?
Well, that sounds like a good topic for my Dear Distance Guru column, which I've only written one of. I said it was going to be weekly, but John Kelly got hit by a car on his bike. He's alive, folks, but pretty gnarly. Anyways, because I actually once asked him, like, how much faster, if you're a 9-minute guy in high school and you run 50 miles a week, how much faster would you be if you ran 100 miles a week? The mileage, it's not as fast, it's not like as much faster as you think. So I'm not saying mileage is important. It is important, but I hadn't thought about it. I would want some more time to think about it. But my first thought would be, it's not like we haven't seen plenty of high school girls run super fast and super low mileage. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we've seen Natalie Cook and Elizabeth Leachman do it. Are there other ones you're thinking of?
I'm just saying throughout history, most high school girls weren't running very much, but they were setting records. Yeah, I guess they weren't running. You're saying that these girls are running way faster than they did? Yeah, that's a point. I mean, I think that the cross training would certainly help, but 30 to 40 miles a week on 3 to 4 days. So she's running 10 miles a day.
Right. I guess my thing is,
I don't think 30 to 40 miles a week is that low for a high school girl, historically speaking.
No. That's fair, especially if you're only running a few times a week. But I guess what's interesting to me is, like, why is this cross-training stuff becoming, you know, can it just replicate running? And, like, you know, Parker Valby essentially cross-trains unless she's doing a workout. She'll just do cross-training for like easy mileage. Is it like just a one-for-one substitution? And then why are we seeing it on the women's side, but not really on the men's side?
Well, I know John Kelly's always said mileage is a little bit less important on women, for women as compared to men, based on red blood cells. And I think maybe because they're so much smaller and lighter. They don't have to be as strong. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's a smart plan to, like, think that, oh, it's better to run less than it is to run more because of these three girls. But that being said, Grant Fisher done a great job across training and staying in shape. So if you're going to run 34 miles a week, I don't think that's enough to be super elite. So I think it's good that one day a week she kind of does her long run while cross training. Then a couple days a week, she gets a few more miles in. So I think that's a smart way to do it. But like, should everybody be doing that instead of running? I would be inclined to say no, but I hadn't really thought about it. But what's crazy to me is Addy Ritzenheim ran last week, and there's a big thread on her. This is Dathan Ritzenheim's daughter, who actually beat Lichtman at the NXN Championship and won the title. Lichtman was kind of the favorite, got out to a huge lead, went out too hard and cratered and finished like 12th place or something. And Eddie's also a sophomore. And I guess over the weekend, she ran 4:44 for 1600 at 5,000 feet. So super impressive. People are debating whether she's better than Lichtman. You know, some people are like, oh, she beat Lichtman in NXN. Someone's like, look, just because you beat someone in a race doesn't mean they're better. Like Lichtman, you know, I think
she went out way too hard in that race. And that's something that is a topic in the article Sarah Lodge Butler wrote, is her coach has talked to her about this. This is one of her weaknesses as a runner, is sometimes she will just go out too hard and it can lead to her downfall. Sometimes it produces amazing times, but that's just kind of her style as a runner. But yeah, I'm not saying if she'd relaxed a little bit more, would she have beaten Addy Ritzenheim? I don't know. But she kind of shot herself in the foot at NXN.
But what's interesting to me is what this message board Quicker points out. Ritzenheim and Lichtman and their coaches clearly have very different approaches. Ritzenheim races way less than Lichtman, and when she does, it's outstanding. I don't think she's ever had a bad race. I'm not saying that one approach is better than the other. They're both awesome to watch, and this is going to be a great battle for the next 2 years. And then, you know, people are debating who's better. I would say, and then people are also saying, like, Sadie Englehart's the best miler. You know, Leachman's clearly the best, like, 5,000 runner. Maybe Ritzenheim could be the best 2-miler if you want to, you know, split the difference. But, like, what's wild to me, and I was thinking to myself, like, I just Leachman's racing, like, all the time, doubling. Like, why? For me, I was like, well, why? Like, I do believe that, like, a best workout is a race, but I'm like, you really need to be doing all this stuff? Is this just going to hype up more pressure, you know, to be going for all these records? But then I'm like, is she really even going for all these records? She's just so, so sick good. Like, John, have you seen this? Like, guess what second place was in this race?
Like, 16:30.
She ran 15:25 at Texas Relays. Did you see what second place is?
Was not close.
16 minutes. So she's just soloing a 15:25 by herself. Like, that's wild to me. So, look, one of Let's Run's rules is do not talk about a teenage phenom on the women's side until they're, I think we said until they PR at 19 years of age. We're breaking that rule, but we're following the second rule. Don't bring them up in the first half of the podcast because we don't want to put undue pressure on them.
No, I mean, I don't like your rule, though. Your rule is just, like, ignore their accomplishments. Like, you can say, we had this when Jenna Hutchins was breaking records, or Natalie Cook, or Caitlin Tui. You can applaud them and say they're an incredible athlete, and it's so impressive what they're doing. And it doesn't need to all be, you're worthless if you aren't still PRing at 19 years old. Not everyone does that. That's okay. And her coach comes across very, Jenny Breuer in the article, wants her to be continuing to have success as a college runner and as a professional, if that's what she wants to do. They're not just saying, oh, we're going to grind you into dust and just ring you for everything you're worth in high school. But I think it's fine to congratulate these women on their accomplishments as high schoolers, and not every discussion has to be, but how good are they going to be as pros? We don't need to have that discussion. We can just say, hey, they're running great. And it's interesting that they're doing it, at least Leachman's case, with such a heavy amount of cross training. That's what's interesting to me. Not like, oh, could she make the Olympics? Could she medal in 2028? We don't need to have that discussion right now.
But is she doing the heavy cross training purposely just to try to be safe? It seems weird to me that they would do all that cross training and then race all the time. I personally would be more under the Ritzenheim approach of rarely racing.
Well, it seems to be working for him.
We'll link to that article in the show notes, as well as to postnuptial shutoff t-shirt. In case you still want to get one for your upcoming bachelor party, What even bachelorette party?
I was kind of curious. Your postnuptial shutoff thing. You know, that article, that's from 27. Sorry, that was from 17 years ago. That thread when gay marriages weren't as common or recognized, you know, or legal in some states in the United States. You know, now we must have had enough time for some of this data to stop pouring in. Do you think that I'm curious? Does it affect homosexual couples in the same way as it affects heterosexual couples? Like, is there a postnuptial shutoff? Is it just for heterosexual? Does it affect man? Does it affect woman? Like, I want to see all the data across the spectrum to see whether the same thing applies to gay marriages as it does to straight ones.
Interesting debate. I haven't seen the data, John. I would say the 71 pages full of anecdotes. Has this ever been studied by scientists?
Oh, I thought, well, you linked to something. I didn't go through enough detail in your article to tell if it was an actual study or not.
Well, that was a study, though, about how the marriage decline. Marriages have declined by 20% since this thread was started. And part of my April Fool's joke was, well, people aren't getting married because they've heard that you don't have very much intercourse after you get married. I would imagine, well, we're really off topic here. I mean, not off topic, but not talking right. But I would imagine that the amount of sex in gay couples would go down because there's roommate issues. I think most marriage issues are just roommate issues. Like, John, have you had the same roommates for the last 10 years? No. Imagine having the same roommate for the next, you know, 50 years, hopefully. So, but let's be honest. I mean, men just have higher sex drives generally speaking.
Well, that's what you think. I mean, that's what we think. That's sort of the conventional wisdom, but is it true? That's why I want to compare it across the orientations.
Well, email John at jonathangault@letsrun.com. jonathangault@letsrun.com. We'll be giving out free relationship advice soon. You know, by the way,
sabbatical from Let's Run for the next 10 years to just ask married couples how much sex they have. I'm sure that's going to end well for me. All right, Robert. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. We'll be back on the Friday 15. We do have the Cherry Blossom US 10 Mile Championships this weekend. So maybe we'll talk about that on Friday. I'm struggling to think what else we would have to talk about. So I think by default, we'll probably be previewing it. Next week, less than 2 weeks away from Marathon Monday, one of the great years in the city of Boston, one of the great days in the city of Boston, one of the great days on the running calendar, April 15th. The Boston Marathon. Can't wait for it. We'll have LRC coverage. It's going to be a great time. So we're getting close to Boston.
Maybe I'll have to cover Cherry Blossom. Boots on the ground myself. Is it Saturday or Sunday?
It's like Saturday. It's like 7 a.m. on Saturday, Robert, in Washington. I'm not sure. I mean, not to question your dedication, but I wouldn't blame you if you don't go.
No, excuse to go see my friends in D.C. and then crash on their couch. Well, they'd have to get up at like 5:30. We'll see. All right. Check the show notes for the links. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.